But was I just too ugly to molest? I'm insulted. Was I fat? I'm
Were
fat now,
you?
but
No, you were pretty fuckable. I gotta say, as a young boy,
thank you. I
you were
appreciate
pretty
that.
fuckable.
Oh man, it's too bad that the Star Trek show doesn't have intro quotes.
What are you, the hell are you talking about? Of course it does.
Does now.
I gotta say, hey Mickey, you were a very fuckable young boy.
I can't
you're
make that
so gonna
intro.
regret.
I can't make that intro quote. That crosses a line,
Yeah, I broke the system.
Right, it's not like you had standards before.
I broke the system. I finally got something so offensive that he won't put it into an intro quote.
That's impressive because some of us have been trying that for years.
I know. I seriously was an allusion to having bestiality sex with a donkey. So, yeah.
Well, that's
So
fine.
crosses the line. Child rape.
Bat and
Child
pony.
rape. Not funny.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek with Chris.
I was going to protest I am not a merry man, but,
Hey, Mickey.
Set phasers to Roofy.
Scott.
Speaking of that, have you ever had a mule?
And Fort Max.
Why is Voyager?
Yeah, sorry, XV, you're gonna have to like take control of this shit at some point.
No, no, I'm not.
All right, all right.
Fort
Scott,
Max will just step up and tell us to shut up.
Scott, in a few years, you'll understand exactly the level of control I choose to exert over this, which is none.
Okay. So it's just that.
Well, unless we get to start to talking about the.
Yeah, basically.
All right.
Yeah.
Or Don.
Well, okay. That depends what you say about Don. Honestly.
And middle schools.
Yeah. I'm sure Don had all kinds of interesting experiences in middle school.
I'm sure he's...
Due to content restrictions beyond our control, we are unable to bring you the remainder of this sentence. We apologize for any inconvenience.
Okay, so this week on that one episode of Star Trek, we're doing Deep Space Nine, and we're doing a very special episode of Deep Space Nine.
So well, special.
Where Jake does drugs?
Well, we don't know what he took on that ship with him.
Jake comes out to his dad?
We don't know what they were talking about when we weren't there.
You know, I've got a very facial, hairy feeling about this episode.
Scott, what exactly is a facial, hairy feeling?
I don't know. I just get the impression that the facial hair is going to be pretty much the main point of this episode.
I thought the main point of this episode was the introduction of Lita.
Well, yes. Yeah, Chase Masterson, which was a much-needed addition to the cast.
And by addition to the cast, you mean appeared about 10 times over the rest of the series.
Yeah, but she left such
And then married Rom.
Yeah, she left two perfectly circular impressions on the show.
Well, of course they were perfectly circular. They were, you know, made separately.
They were replicated, but that's okay.
Uh-huh. I wonder what breast implant technology is like in the 24th century. Like, do they just, is it just like, you know, genetic modification at that point?
Or do they just teleport things in?
No, they evolved beyond the need to have breasts.
Oh, no, they haven't. Lwaxana proved that last week. yes. Well, I would imagine that they have special gyroscopes to keep them stable in zero G. Because you don't want those bad boys just going everywhere while you're, you know, while you're out there.
They're tachyon stabilized.
Yeah, I imagine
they
like
stay
some
up using antichronotons.
Uh huh.
Well, I imagine like the tips glow red, and then they get these nice blue stripes down the sides.
And something other.
And they're... That's some beautiful nacelles you have there. Thank you, doctor.
There has to be something blinking on there, though, too.
Right. Well, that's why you go to Dr. Bashir and get that shit taken care of.
Yeah, so as we open the episode, Lita kind of saunters up and goes, "Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I've got a bad case of loving you."
Yeah, I have to say, this is one of the most awkwardly written scenes I've ever seen, because they're both good actors, but man, the dialogue is terrible. They look like they're going through pain to say these words.
Yeah, but I would imagine so, because, you know, they're decent actors and they're being given shitty dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so apparent.
You can literally see the confusion in their face, like, how the shit do I deliver this?
Right, right.
Is this supposed to be straight-faced?
Because this is supposed to sound like awkward, veiled flirting.
And it is, but that's what's wrong with this. Like, when you try to do a crappy version of something to make fun of something, and you do it crappily, you lose all the intention totally, you know.
Yeah.
And then, oh, thank God, here's Dax.
Yes. Lieutenant Commander Cockblock.
Beat me to it! Beat me to it, you bastard!
Listen, I've been waiting all day to deliver that line. Like hell, I was going to let you get there first.
Damn, I knew I should have fucking Picard maneuvered in front of you and taken it, but I didn't.
Wait, you're going to pull your shirt down when you stood up?
Maybe.
How is that going to help?
Well, if you could see my rippling chest, you would understand.
Rippling or jiggle?
I assume that will be your next Skype display picture.
I don't mean rippling. I meant undulating. I'm sorry. Wrong words. Yes. So
Bashir's response to her is to have pass Dax a note that says, fuck off.
Yeah. I also like that apparently they have a Swift key on the pads. Since he presses it two times and gets go away.
Well, he's Dr. Bashir. He has that as a shortcut key. I mean, for commonly used sayings. I love the fact that when she's walking away, she like turns around and you can just feel the tension of her like, okay, what's one final last cock block she's going to throw? What thing is she going to say to ruin his chances here? And then she manages to come up with something.
Hey, isn't that girl from your class coming to visit?
Yeah.
The one who's better than you?
In every way. And then like, oh, no, it's only in 3 weeks. Bitch.
His boner was already deflated.
And then we get a subtle indication of what the timeline of this episode is going to be.
Right, right. Because that becomes important later on, because you start thinking, as a viewer, you're thinking, how is this all happening in like an afternoon? And then you go, that's right, it's been weeks. Okay, okay.
Uh-huh. So I guess about this time we find out that Sisko has finally started his midlife crisis.
Yep.
As he walks into the room, interrupting Jake viewing Pornhub on his tablet.
Okay, see, like, what I was going to reference there was, Sisko comes in, Jake immediately hides his pad so his dad does not see the Ferengi porn on it.
Right.
Dad, Doc!
Yeah, because, you know, even the Ferengi, they have, like, theme porn. It's like, you know, they have doctors and nurses, like, Moogie Howser, M.D.,
No.
Really?
This is Ferengi porn. It's all about profit.
Well, yeah, like, Ferengi porn is the only porn in the Alpha Quadrant that you still have to pay for.
It's rental. You have to give it back.
They mail you a pad.
Yes.
Which is kind of funny because they show all their women naked for free.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in their own household, but if you want to see someone else's naked woman,
right.
You gotta pay for that.
Yeah, same thing like burkas. I mean, I can go out on the street and see burkas all day, but I want to see a different burka. That joke's only funny in Saudi Arabia, so, okay. Or it's not funny here at all, I don't know.
But yeah, Sisko's grown himself a beard. Sisko's grown himself a nice beard, and he's decided, you know what? I'm going to build a boat.
And Jake's like, oh, okay, Dad. You're scaring me.
And one thing about this episode, too, is Sisko was, like, so nice and jovial and smiley and, hey, everybody, how's everybody doing? Hey, he's my favorite son. It's really kind of creepy.
Okay, so this episode is basically the turning point for Sisko. And, like, the beard's the visual indication of that, but, like, through the first part of the series, Avery Brooks was kind of restrained in how he was portraying Sisko for the majority of the time. But around this point, he started to, like, be more free to do Sisko as he feels Sisko would be.
Right, he starts free to be Avery Brooks.
Yeah, yeah. He's bringing more of himself into the role now.
Right, right. He starts owning the character and making it his.
Uh-huh.
And what's season three? That's how Star Trek usually works. First two seasons kind of suck. Season three starts getting good.
And, like, this point of change is really important for Sisko becoming Sisko. And this episode focusing on his and Jake's relationship is a really strong thing for me, just as a general concept, because, like, Deep Space Nine was different because you had the commander character with his son there all the time. So you got that long-term development of the family relationship that you don't have with any of the other series casts. They never have their family right there as regular characters with them.
Yeah, because even TNG kind of touched on it a little bit. And they put – some of it to me is kind of the responsibility, because he's commander of this station. Not only does he care about all of his subordinates and the people working for him, he has to worry about his own son being on board. So he has a very vested interest in protecting the station. Picard had that, but nothing direct.
Right.
So I think you're absolutely right.
No, I mean, you know, we've talked about how the feel of Deep Space Nine is different because it's basically a Star Trek show set in a town in space. And this is another component of that. So, yeah, you get – Jake brings so much to it that I don't think a lot of people really stop and think about, because you get the civilian point of view for a lot of stuff, but directly connected to the command staff. And you also – you get a different exploration of a main character because he's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a whole different facet.
Yeah.
Jake is disregarded a lot because his early episodes, he basically is just a kid running around.
Right.
Where he gets really interesting in the later seasons where he's an adult.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
With his own motivations. That's not Starfleet related.
Yeah, and that's what makes season 3 and 4 really interesting for when Jake appears, because this is the point in the series where he is maturing visibly on screen and becoming himself.
Yes, he's beginning to fill out that civilian uniform quite well.
Well, by season 7, he certainly matured quite well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah, he's 7 feet tall.
And then he just kept on maturing into something not as pleasant anymore.
Yeah, well, you know. Shit happens.
Yeah. Time make fools of all.
I prefer to think of it as a companion arc.
Particularly is this, because...
What, Fort Max?
Go, what? What are you talking about particularly, Mickey?
Cyril Lofton grew to be a very handsome man in the show, and then he grew to be not handsome after the show ended.
Oh.
Sorry, I was being too vague.
No, it's one of those things where the concept of him existing after the show ended never crossed my mind. I'm not trying to be mean, it's just, oh yeah, he's still a person after the show. But I've never seen him act in anything else, so his existence ended with the end of the show.
Like, I saw him in, like, one role, I think, a couple years after Deep Space Nine. And then after that, I don't remember hearing about him doing acting work anymore.
So I would like to say we are talking through a montage.
Well, we're going to wind back here in a second.
Oh, we are? Okay, all right. Well, like I said, it's like a montage is a good time to do stuff like that.
No, but I mean, there's still a little bit before that we should touch on. No, it just, because these themes are so strong in this episode, and this is that this opening scene is where that kind of kicks off. It just, like, that's kind of just where this flowed out of to really hit on what all this kind of means, both for this episode and just as it develops in Deep Space Nine going forward from here. Because I feel like this is a lot of where the Sisko and Jake both their characters and the relationship kind of start developing really strongly that carries through all the way to the end of the series.
Yeah, I think you're right. This was like the definitely the genesis of all that. This is the start line. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Also, XP, what are you drinking tonight?
I've got some Mountain Dew. Why?
Because, man, this shit is making you serious. I have never seen you so seriously take apart an episode before. I'm a little weirded out. I'm a little concerned.
So Explorers has always been one of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. Like, if I were to have a top 10 list of Deep Space Nine episodes, this would be, you know, within the first three. I don't actually have a concrete top 10 list worked out, but this episode's always been really important to me. I like the concepts that it introduces in sci-fi terms. I like the character development that you see from it. I watch this episode probably more frequently than any other single Deep Space Nine episode, just because there's so much about this that I like and so much that I can sit and watch it and just see a lot of depth in it, especially knowing where the show goes in later seasons. It's like I said, it's like a turning point for the series in several ways, and it's really fun for me to just go back to, and it's really enjoyable for me.
You could write a think piece about it.
I could, but I won't. Okay, so I think by this point we can probably move to the cargo bay where Sisko's, you know, placing his order.
So I call it Brian's like, why the shit are you doing this? This is dumb.
Which is weird because he's an engineer who builds and fixes shit for a living. How does he not get that building something is cool?
He's an engineer, but he is a 24th century engineer. So like, Sisko asks for a saber saw.
You're
and,
right.
And O'Brien's like, a what?
You should use a laser cutter. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it like they did it.
See, this is exactly what an injured... If you went to an injured day and said, I'm going to build a stone car. I need a hammer and chisel. They're going to say, are you retarded? Just use, like, a drill.
Well, I hope they would
That's
say...
That's exactly what an engineer would say.
Well, I would also hope they would say, it's like, you know the Flintstones wasn't a documentary, right? That didn't
to which
really happen.
Responds, because it's fun.
And, okay, when you put it that way, hit Miles O'Brien's reaction of, what the shit, is totally reasonable.
It's also reasonable, too, because his and Kira's dialogue kind of lays out the conflict of the episode, too, where you got one side where this is sort of like fairy tale stuff from the outside perspective. The Bajorans right. firmly believe this ship flew and went to Cardassia.
So, no, God, this is DS9 Mythbusters.
It is. It is. And there's all this cultural weight behind it and everything. And so, wait, isn't Cardassia in a different star system? It's not in the same solar system.
Right. That's why they were saying it would take years to get there under the ship's own power.
Yeah, like hundreds. Oh, solar sail. Okay, I'm not going to pick apart the science of this, even though I really want to. I'm going to try to go with the flow and go with the spirit.
The show was smart and never said exactly how far Cardassia was from Bajor.
If it's in a different solar system, it has to be at least a light year.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
I would
a full day's drive away.
I would assume, you know, it's probably between 5 and 10 light years away. Just because, like, from the context of the ancient voyages, even if they took all the time to go there, however they managed it, you know, a journey that would take 50 years or whatever, if they could get to a reasonable fraction of the speed of light with the solar sails. You know, that would be a lot more implausible. But I could see them still looking at, okay, maybe it took them 6-7 years to get there. But that's something doable. If, you know, commitment heavy.
I suppose, I don't know. Is that, I mean, for a solar cell, because the farther you get away from your host star, the slower you go, because there's less solar wind.
But not
the slower you go, the slower your acceleration.
Yeah, you lose acceleration until you get you lose acceleration until you get in range of another star that's blowing.
Techno babble pseudoscience later on to solve that problem. So,
well, yeah, I mean, also, as far as there's the conflict between O'Brien's engineering mind, Sisko's not in this for engineering to any degree. He's wanting to do a historical recreation. He is being a Civil War reenactor, basically.
And
he is building a giant model ship. He's not trying to design something new. And that's also where the disconnect between what this is about and O'Brien's perception comes from.
Yeah, because Brian is a Starfleet engineer. He's all about making it as high-tech and efficient and powerful as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, get the job done, you know, efficient.
Put a warp core in it.
Maybe not a warp core, but at least an impulse engine.
Yeah, yeah, just a little fusion reaction.
He's going to need a secondary backup.
Right. He's going to need something with a plasma conduit running through it. So that when the ship, you know, rocks a little bit.
Miles is like, whoa, sir. So are you telling me you're going to get aboard a spaceship that doesn't have exploding panels? You're mad.
That doesn't sound safe.
Mickey, you're Cyloning out a little bit. This also, like, plays into, we touched on this way back on another Deep Space Nine episode, how Sisko has a background in starship design. Like, he worked at Utopia Planitia for a while. He was involved with the design of the Defiant. Building ships is something that, it's one of his passions.
Yeah, I forgot that he was directly involved with designing the Defiant. I forgot about that.
So
I remember that, but I always thought that seemed far-fetched. But now you can put this in context with it, it doesn't seem quite as far out there now.
You know, yeah, I mean, this whole thing is a passion project for Sisko, playing back to stuff that was referenced at the beginning of the season, if not earlier.
Am I crazy, or is XV starting to make sense?
Scott, the two are not mutually exclusive. In fact, you might say XV is making sense more because you're crazy.
Yes. That'd be a warning to anybody who might be listening to this.
Yes, if I sound rational now, you might want to talk to a doctor.
Right.
So, montage sequence now.
Yeah, so he, you know, you hear like the Jay Giles band in the background doing freeze frame or something.
I also the implications that Sisko is just like abandoning his work entirely to build a boat.
And that's the other thing. Is everything so quiet in like this sector of space that he can just fuck off for a couple weeks?
I sort of get the impression more that he does this in a couple of hours. Nope, ship's done.
No, like, he builds the structure of the ship in a day, and he spends the remainder of the 3 weeks weaving the solar sail by hand.
He's got like a loom.
No, he's just got giant knitting needles.
Which are like red on the tips and the blue stripes down the sides.
Uh-huh. And he's just sitting there at the cargo bay door with the environment. The door is open, the environmental force field's on so the air doesn't rush out, and he's just weaving it out into space.
I can get this weird 0.001 drag coefficient on the station. What the hell's going on? It's the equivalent of your seatbelt hanging out your door of your car.
That'd be great if the station was still in orbit around Bajor and he did that and it like pulled the station out of orbit.
Hit one of their moons or something.
That's the one thing about this that always kind of bugged me in terms of execution is those sails are so big that the whole ship couldn't have been inside the station for the whole stage of construction. And I would have liked to see at least one scene of Sisko in a space suit, you know, against their cheap twinkly light starfield doing something with the ship outside.
Caddy. Yeah. Well, one thing I don't think they ever addressed this, too.
Why would that be zero G? Makes him queasy.
There's magnet boots.
Oh, yeah.
Magnet boots.
They never explained how the ancient Bajorans would get a ship like this into orbit and out of the gravity well of their planet.
Right.
Same way humans did it?
Yeah, I assume you're just supposed to, like, if you're thinking about that hard, you're just supposed to believe, okay, so they rocket it up into space like a conventional spaceship, and from there, go.
They have their Saturn own ISS bot. Space station thing.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. If they had the level of scientific sophistication to figure out solar sails, they very well could have had orbital facilities to be building stuff from that, you know, over the centuries, as the Bajoran civilization kind of declined a little bit, which is the implication you get of what their state was before the occupation started, you know, that stuff could have fallen into disrepair, not been replaced because the Bajorans didn't think they needed that stuff anymore. It's just one interpretation you can take of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we could go on and make hilarious parallels between modern politics and what happened to the Bajorans and losing their space program, but I'll save that for another day.
Well, I don't think the Bajorans lost their space program. Is they got warp capability and they stopped making sail ships.
Did they have warp drive before the Cardassians came, though? That's the question.
I think they did.
And if that's the case, how did they not just nuke the Cardies?
Well, you can have a fast car and not own a gun.
Well, yeah, but I can still hit people with that car.
Okay, so by nuke the Cardies, you mean just, like, fly their ships and blow up the reactors on them?
Yeah, you have antimatter reactors. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they could have won any kind of war. It's really easy to weaponize.
Well, okay, that's assuming that the ships the Bajorans were making were large and not just, like, short-range warp shuttlecrafts versus Galar-class cruisers.
Yeah, well, did the Cardassians have Galar-class cruisers back in the day, though?
Well, they had something equivalent, you know.
I'm pretty certain whatever they had was a military battleship, and I don't think the Bajorans had a navy.
Yeah,
I think they had a space program, but not a navy.
Yeah, it'd be like the Atlantis, like the space shuttle Atlantis running against something. Makes sense. Okay, all right, I'm on board. I convinced me.
We're going to crash our ship into you, then a spread of photon torpedoes blows it the fuck out of the sky.
Right. Spiral wave phaser beam. That's it.
No, if they had warp drive, which I'm not convinced they even did before the Cardassians showed up, I don't think they were militarily capable to that degree.
Right.
No, it took being occupied to turn them to the hard asses that they became.
Well, there's other episodes. I don't remember which. It's one of the ones where Gul Dukat and Kira are doing something together. And, you know, Gul Dukat is looking at the occupation as, we basically drove you to being a self-sufficient, industrious society.
Yeah.
Because of what we did to you. And Kira is like, fuck you. And, like anything, I think the truth is kind of in the middle of that.
Yeah, those things aren't mutually exclusive. Right. I mean, it is an offensive thing to say, but it's like, you know, like modern day when you say, well, wars push technology forward. Look at, like, between World War I and World War II, how our technology in the Western civilization just leapfrogged.
Right,
it's like,
exactly.
It sucks, but it's true.
Yeah, and because of what the Bajorans had to make themselves become as a result of the occupation, yeah, they developed scientifically, technologically, militarily, and came out the other side with a different mindset, different capabilities. I think the Cardassians are probably telling the truth that the Bajorans were a failing, well, maybe not failing society, but they were on a downward slope when the Cardassians
were stagnant.
Yeah.
Stagnating, yeah. Yeah, good word.
Yeah, they had fallen into their own hole, basically, and did not see a need to spread themselves out anymore.
They fell into a Kai hole.
You were stuffed your Kai hole.
They were a religion of peace.
Ugh.
And then became a religion of peace.
I'm not going to touch that one. Yeah, the Saudi Arabian one didn't go over well, so I'm just not going to touch that one.
Let's get back to the episode here.
Yeah.
Because
no, I think the
Cisco's
montage
cooked
is
a delicious
over
dinner,
now.
And Jake's telling him, I can't go because I want to get my dick wet.
Yeah, basically.
And Jake feels guilty, but he's going to get laid, so sorry, Dad.
Yeah. Look, Cisco's I didn't grow this bad teenage mustache for nothing.
Cisco's disappointed, but I think he understands.
He doesn't understand. It's like, yeah, pussy.
Yeah, because at first he's kind of like, are you sure you don't want to? Oh, puberty. Yeah, like you, son, I have hair where I didn't have hair before. Gestures to his face.
Face puberty.
It's the best kind.
His tongue starts growing.
Oh, God.
Only when he gets excited.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because he does kind of the sad puppy dog. Well, okay, son, if you don't want to spend time with me, cats in the cradle. It's like, oh, come on. Jesus. Cats in the holodeck. You know, man. Lamb-fisted, but whatever.
Also, I like that Sisko couldn't even be bothered to change out of his coveralls for dinner. Because you know, too, he just came back from the cargo bay to get dinner out of the replicator, eat it, and he's going right back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Here's your dinner, son. It's Hot Pockets.
Yeah. While he's sitting there smelling up their quarters.
Glad it's warm.
He's sitting there in his sweaty coverall smelling up their quarters for dinner.
So I guess the ancient Bajorans had arc welders?
Sure, why not?
Probably, if they were able to fly into space in the first place. I mean,
I don't know.
It's not Stone Age Bajorans. I mean, the implication is that Bajorans 800 years ago were more advanced than humans are right now today for us.
And it sounds like...
So they probably had arc welders.
Yeah, and I think Bajorans prior to 800 years ago were even more advanced than that, and that fell away too.
Oh, wow. So it's been just a downward slide for like millennia?
I think it's like had its ups and downs. Because in season 5, they talk about Bahala, the capital city of the Old Republic, which was lost for like 20,000 years. So, you know, I think there's been civilizations fall, civilizations rise on Bajor a few times over the millennia.
It kind of sounds like the writer of that episode has been spending too much time in the Star Wars extended universe.
Yeah, well...
It's interesting just from the perspective of, okay, here's a planet that has a really, really long history, a lot of which is recorded and can be researched.
Right, it's a civilized history of that long, right. Yeah, because like humans, we have like 3,000 years, maybe 4, depending, you know, how far we want to go back. That's about it.
6,000, I think, in China.
Yeah, maybe some Sumerian stuff about that old. So, yeah, 4,000 BC, and after that, it's just, meh, who knows? Could be anything.
When the Bajorans were introduced in The Next Generation, one of Picard's logs mentions how the Bajorans were writers and philosophers and everything when humans were just starting to walk upright.
Good Lord. So, like, 100,000 years?
Something,
okay.
Something like that. So, like, Bajor has a long known history.
A long known boring history?
I'm not saying anything about that, just, you know.
Oh, I am.
Well, the thing we learned about Bajorans from DS9 is that they don't change quickly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, their culture probably had a very slow progression.
Right. Because they had a caste system for a while, too, didn't they?
Right up until the occupation.
Oh, wow. That always works out well. That's clearly the best way to make a civilization is force your people to, like, perform roles that don't suit them.
Well, I mean...
A functionist.
Yeah.
It got them through, you know, 30, 40,000 years, probably.
Yeah, it got them through it, but it didn't exactly help.
No, I suppose not.
Like a Judzi is such a bitch in this episode. I mean, seriously, it's like, jeez.
Well, that's because Kira didn't have enough screen time.
Yeah, Kira was like all happy and stuff.
Maybe they got the parts backwards.
Oh, Kira's happy because Sisko is busy sucking Bajor's dick through that entire episode.
That's right. You suck that big cultural 20,000-year-old dick.
She's just sitting up there in ops, rubbing her hands together. He is going to prove those Cardassians so wrong.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And Sisko is just deep-throating the hell out of Bajoran culture.
Yeah, you know, she's flicking the bean thinking about proving Dukat wrong.
Well, that's about where we are in the episode, isn't it? Where Dukat calls all concerned.
Yeah, rubbing her ridges. So it makes a little xylophone noise. Okay. Gold Dukat. Much better. Okay. Here we go. Gold shower.
Scott, what are you drinking tonight?
Man, I'm just high on life.
The cereal? I didn't know you could smoke that.
Up and you snort it. Those sugar crystals go right to the brain. Doing lines. So Golda Kotz basically just called Sisko to make fun of him. By the way, you're
to
an
make
idiot.
Fun of one, but part two is to do the whole Cardassian. Are you sure you want to do this? You sure it won't backfire somehow?
There won't be a horrible accident.
That's a mighty nice model ship you have there. Be a shame if something happened to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be just dreadful if you turned inside out on your trip.
Because they opened the little airlock on the wall and put their anus up to it. For more on this, listen to this week's Superhero Time.
Yeah, that would be a terrible thing to do, put a pinhole into the hull of this thing and just watch them get sucked to it and then sucked inside out.
Or is it blown out?
Blown out. The way the pressure works, yeah. Blown out.
I just credited Scott on science.
The more you know.
I'll make that neutral quote.
So the ship leaves DS9, apparently under its own power, with no sails, and just goes impulse engineing away.
Can I imagine that DS9 farted it away?
Yeah, they could have just grabbed it with a tractor beam and given it a little shove.
I don't think Sisko would have allowed that.
The other thing, too, is you have to think, like, if the ship has to maneuver while it's underway, it probably has, like, some sort of little rockets. Not for its own propulsion.
I know what it is. It was spring-loaded.
Ah! Now,
you just press the missile launching button and the ship flies away from DS9.
Right, so now, does this have the same kind of safety regulations where, like, there has to be 2 inches of it sticking out the other end?
Yes, and DS9 has to have an orange barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the first time they did that, it landed on the throat of a 3-year-old and it choked to death.
And the second time they tried it, a cop shot them.
Oh my god, you actually beat me on that one. Props. Very good. Ooh. Ah, we'll be getting some calls about that one.
Ooh. Well, someone would have to listen first.
Yeah. Your mom's going to call you and say she's very disappointed in you. Hi, Mrs. XB.
I call XB's mom has the same name as him. XB is his surname.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. Your mom is Mrs. Hey Mickey, so I don't know what's weird about this. So they're out in the ship, just two hairy men on a ship out in space.
Well, one hairy man. The other one's Jake.
Yeah. Smooth as an android's bottom.
They're sailors.
There's only another word for that that'd be funny. It's a pretty neat looking ship, I gotta say. It's kind of cool, but just makes no sense.
I'm kind of impressed they threw the ship together, the set, for just one episode.
I wonder if it's like a shuttlecraft they just redid. It's about the same size.
Regardless, there's a lot of detail in it.
Yeah.
I don't outwardly recognize it as being stolen from other sets. So.
Yeah, you're right. The curves and everything, it actually looks Bajoran. All the ovals.
It's textured. There's fine details. I mean, this set looks pricey.
I agree.
Yeah, but half the episode is set in it, so, I mean, I think the cost of building it's justified.
That's true. They didn't have to, like, build any land sets for new planets or anything. And the
interesting thing about that, too, is that, like, up to this point, it's a bottle episode.
Yeah.
And in a certain sense, it still is, since it's still just taking place inside ship. Just, it's a new ship.
Here's a question. Did they ever name the ship that they're on?
I don't think so.
That's kind of weird to be on a ship without a name. That seems like it'd be really bad luck.
It's the Sisko.
No, he's the Sisko.
No, it's spelled differently. This one's spelled with a C.
Oh, C-I-S-C-O.
Yeah. He keeps dropping the network. Great.
No, he keeps dropping the thong song.
Oh, God.
Maybe it's
when you make brownies.
Maybe it's S-Y-S-C-O and it brings you food.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of variations on Sisko.
Yeah.
It's quite the homophone. Oh my god.
You're a homophone.
No offense, hey Mickey.
This conversation's gotten very homophonic.
So I like the part where Cisco just completely trolls Jake. Hey, you want something to drink? Yeah. Here's a Capri Sun filled with water.
Not an alcoholic juice box? Damn. Yeah.
It's a Capri Sun with no sugar. It just has the flavor but no sugar. Ugh.
Oh no, it's not even water. It's natural gas. Because it's got the blue flame on it.
Oh, right.
ethane, my favorite. What am I, a bullion? Ha, bullion joke.
They're bald.
And they have stinky intestinal systems because they eat stuff that we can't.
Who doesn't have stinky intestinal systems?
Me?
Me. Yeah, I take Metamucil. I'm fine.
Well, also the aforementioned new car smell suppositories help with that too.
Yeah.
It's like, what, 6 episodes ago? So we totally care about the conversation that Cisco and Jake are having aboard the ship now, aren't we? Oh, yeah, they had him read a story. Hey, Dad, read my crappy fanfic.
Oh, yeah, we kind of skipped over why Jake actually ended up going with, because he got a phone call from New Zealand. He's going to be a Power Ranger.
What color is it going to be?
Pink.
Pink? Okay. Are you sure it's not light red?
Why light red?
Yeah, because, I don't know, because he's a guy. It'd be light red.
He's going to be the salmon-colored ranger.
How non-committal.
But he'll be high in omega-3.
Fatty acids. Best kind.
Not lots of sushi. Screw you guys.
So now we're back to the S plot.
Yeah, as far as B plots go, Bashir getting nervous about his rival coming to visit him, they really kind of dropped the ball on that. This should have been more hilarious.
It could have been freaking hilarious, but it's I forget this happening. We're just talking about Cisco and Jake. I literally forgot that Bashir was in this.
I tend to forget that too until I watch it and I'm like, oh shit, I gotta sit through this part to watch the really good stuff.
Yeah.
Odo makes his guest appearance because he's contractually obligated to be in the episode.
Which is fine.
Look, dude's expensive. They're going to put him in the episode if he's listed in the credits.
Mm-hmm. Although the scene where he stands up and he's waiting for her to walk over because she's there, and she looks at him and then walks right past him without even recognizing him is delicious.
Ice cold.
And O'Brien is just sitting at the table behind him trying not to burst out laughing at it.
You know, he's doing the bite in the knuckle going, oh, shit! Overreacts, jumps over a table. Oh shit!
Just for an anime, he'd be kind of like a static frame that just slides across the background.
Oh! With the power line, with the speed lines though. Oh! So Cisco reads the story and goes, "Yeah, it was crap."
Basically, yes. Like, yeah, that was. That was a nice try, Jake.
Yeah, you put words, and they were spelled right, so that's good.
Think about that, though. Jake uses spell check. They actually make that a point in a later episode. Jake cannot spell.
Why would they even make a... That's terrible.
That's because spell check is so good in the future, you don't need to spell.
That's basically my takeaway of what it's saying, yeah.
It's the natural evolution from what we have on cell phones now, where it just autocorrects all the U's and 2's into the actual words.
Right. But in the 24th century, you could just grunt, and the computer would be able to figure out what you meant.
Universal translation.
The best of times, it was the worst of times. Although, Jake gets to troll his dad again, which was awesome.
Right, so Cisco goes on about, well, you know, you haven't, like, you've written about things that you haven't experienced. I mean, unless you've, like, secretly joined the Maquis or something.
Jake gets all serious and is like, well, Dad. And then the look that Cisco has, like, wait, what?
Proving Jake's a better actor than he is a writer.
I think the word you're looking for is liar. It's not acting if you're just lying to somebody.
Well, at its core, acting is just lying to somebody.
Yes.
It's lying with style.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well said. But no, no, I do like, I mean, it's a totally valid point. He's actually giving his son painful but good advice, which I think is cool. Because he's right, you know, it's like, no, you need to write stuff that you know about, and if you do it, then it doesn't seem real, and, you know, it's honest advice.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's very constructive, it is very fatherly advice. He is trying to be nice as he says it, but, I mean, he's telling him the difficult truth he needs to hear so that he can reflect on that and actually, like, improve himself.
Yeah.
But then he follows up with that, no, it actually is good, you should keep doing this.
Well, yeah, because he's not going to get better if he doesn't keep trying.
Right, he didn't practice.
Yeah.
And then they blow out a tire. It goes in the scene with the Christmas story where he's got to help his dad change the tire and he curses. Sorry, that's just my imagination.
Yeah, so they lose one of the sails.
Yeah, there's an issue and they jettison it. Big whoop.
So I call the sails like they just stretched Odo out over a thin frame.
Okay, the effect doesn't look good, but like the Ripley thing kind of makes sense. Since over that size, even you know, the honeycomb material they showed elsewhere in the episode, it would look flexible.
But it would be pulled taut. I mean, there wouldn't be any wiggle or shaking. There's no air to get in the way. It's not blowing.
What if the solar wind dies down? Or changes direction.
I also like how at one point they talk about how they're tacking against the light.
Oh, don't. It's coming from a star. It's coming from one direction. There's no currents. It just goes.
No. I mean, you don't want to hit, like, a solar whirlpool.
Oh, my God. The curvature of space-time at that point, the tensor is zero. It's fucking zero. You're outside of all gravity wells. It's in a straight line.
Now, you look out to the horizon, you see the curvature of space-time.
Yeah. Because it's so flat out there when you're away from
everything.
This
is basic space
sailing. Yeah.
All right. Like I said, I'm trying to enjoy this. I can't.
We're trying to enjoy it too, Scott, and this is how we choose to do so.
But
you know, if the nebula is red by morning, sailor's warning.
That's true, because space is much more dangerous at night. You have to admit.
Yeah, it is, totally.
I mean, that's when it's dark.
Fort Rex beat me to that one.
Hold on. Oh, and so then we get to some racism, which is always good. Oh, look, the Irish guy's drinking and drunk again. Motherfucker. Stop appropriating my Irish-American culture.
At least he's not eating potatoes this week.
But you know he was. They hinted at it. I don't know.
Although, I mean, he's
here about 30 seconds away from kissing in this scene.
That's true. One more drink.
Yeah, I like that exchange. So O'Brien explains to Bashir, well, you're the kind of guy where people either hate you or they love you. And, like, take me. I hate you, or I did when we first met. And now?
And now?
Now what? And now I don't.
Hate you.
Yeah, and that is good, though. I do like their friendship, because they are very different kinds of people.
Yeah.
But they still drink together. They still do stuff together. And that's kind of what draws them together is they're so different. They somehow still get along because men can do that. Uh-huh. Yeah, so this is actually an enjoyable scene. It's good. It's always good to see characters kind of broken down, you know, and getting drunk over a problem is a good way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that part's good. I also like how Bashir just totally cannot handle being drunk to that degree. So, you know, he's, like, staggering around. He wants to go and, like, drag O'Brien out and go sing at Quark's.
Yeah.
Okay. Except Bashir is not drunk.
He's
faking it.
Wait, I think that's called acting again. I think we're back to that.
Okay, now remember, Bashir, he's genetically superior.
Yeah.
He wouldn't process alcohol as weakly as O'Brien would.
You don't think so?
Maybe more.
I don't know. Did they ever establish that, you know, being an
I want to say they had, is that, that they've established that he doesn't get drunk as easy as other people do.
Well, he could have just drank a lot more. Maybe that's why he's hanging out with an Irishman. I mean, you know, well, so
maybe he's gone through like 6 bottles of bourbon to O'Brien's too. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, like at the start of the scene too, when they're still singing, Bashir's trying to pour himself another drink, and he tries to pour O'Brien another one, and O'Brien waves him off.
Right.
Like, you know, O'Brien is very drunk too, and knows he's reached his limit, and Bashir is still going. So even if Bashir's alcohol uptake is slower, or it hits him less, it kind of looks like he's drinking more than O'Brien is anyway.
Although I would like to say that it does bother me a little that Hey Mickey's measurement of unit for bourbon is bottle.
Well, he's drinking with an Irish guy. What do you expect?
Yeah.
A good scene.
Yeah.
It's good to see, like, friendship with actual chemistry.
Well, and this is like, as far as this subplot goes of the episode, this is the high point of it.
Yeah.
Also, it's also good to see Starfleet officers acting like humans.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because can you imagine a Seamuck getting blitzed over a girl in Next Generation?
No. No way.
Imagine Riker and Geordi having this scene.
Nope. Wouldn't work. It just wouldn't.
No. And you're misinterpreting how it would work out anyway in Next Generation. It'd be Geordi and Data having the scene.
Except you have to rule that out because Data doesn't drink. You can't have Data getting
because
drunk.
Because Ayn Riker exactly. would probably be getting hauled off from the bar by a girl who had the hots for him.
Or thrown in the brig again, waking up from unconsciousness.
No, but I mean, that's...
Nobody in Next Gen gets drunk.
No, because it's all synthahol. Nobody keeps
the
real
movie,
stuff around.
They did. In a First
but
Contact...
Also, this isn't unique to the scene. I just want to point out, I love the lighting in the show, how they cast shadows over everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's something that we lost from Next Generation between season 2 and 3, when the director of photography was changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the new one wanted, you know, brighter, less shaded sets. Like, in the first 2 seasons, Next Generation had shadows. It had contrast.
Mm-hmm. And after that, it looked like season 1 of Beast Wars.
Yeah. 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 No, but, like, Deep Space Nine has shadows and contrast. It has, like, the corridors outside the crew quarters or even other places, they're dark.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
just
cool,
it's basically just spotlights on pointing at the floor. That's
yeah,
your lighting for the corridors.
Yeah, it's cool because they retain that because they say, oh, well, this was a Cardassian-made station, and that's how they make things. That's what they're comfortable with, so we're just dealing with it. Instead of fixing it or adding their own lights, they just deal with it. And
yeah.
You're right, it adds that very specific texture and look to the show.
Yeah.
Well, you have thought about this.
It's not just specific to this episode. I mean, it's something I see throughout the whole thing, but yeah. I pay attention to some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And on some weeks, the episode's important enough where I actually want to, you know, talk about it.
That's true. And this is one of them.
So where are we at? Back on the ship?
Sure.
Fun with hammocks.
Yeah. It's hammock time.
Wacky space hammocks. Whoa.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
How did they sleep in hammocks if they didn't have the gravity webbing?
I was thinking the same thing, and maybe hammocks are Cisco's adaptation.
Well,
in
Zero G, you sleep in hammocks anyway. They're just two-sided hammocks. It's like a sleeping bag that you attach to the wall so you don't go floating away.
Well,
so
that's what I'm thinking. Like, the original design probably called for those floating sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Okay.
But with the gravity net, that's not really going to work. So Cisco's probably next closest authentic thing would be a Bajoran hammock.
And it does look like a Bajoran hammock. It
yeah.
looks like they made it, too. The fabric and everything.
They really
did a good job on this.
It's brown and oval shape, so yeah, it's Bajoran.
Yeah, the reddish, ruddy, gold kind of color. Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I call Bajoran's entire culture is defined by one shape and color.
Yeah, just like Earth is. You know, all of Earth. You know, we're defined by like one color and a shape. You know, it's awesome.
How Rymlands are defined by the color green.
Yeah, exactly.
You mean gray?
The green's their color. Klingons are red. Federation is blue.
Yeah, and Federation's blue. The Ferengi are copper because money.
Yeah.
And goes right to their skin.
Yeah. I don't really care about anybody else.
Yeah, that sounds like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Don't really care about anybody else.
Yeah. Well, the Borg are black.
Whoa. You mean the color. Okay.
Except the Borg insignia was often in red.
Yeah, so red and black. Even though their lasers and stuff were green? Yeah, they're kind of green and black.
They just keep reusing colors.
Well, no, you
colors.
Know what it is with the Borg? You know what it is with the Borg? I figured this out already. Since the Borg assimilate other cultures and stuff, they just have everybody's colors.
So you add all colors like paint and it turns it black.
Yeah.
And then you get, bits of red sticking out here and some green shooting out over there. You know, it's just, it's little bits of everything from everybody they've had contact with.
Right.
It's like a shitty Lego project.
Yeah.
Because when they assimilate a culture, they also assimilate their laser pointers.
Yes. Well, they their have to find out the laser pointers are more advanced than the laser pointers they already have.
They'll take their laser pointers and integrate them into their own.
Yes. No, but back to the hammock thing and how even the hammock looks Bajoran. Like, big points to the production designers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everything about this ship feels consistent. Right down to something. Like, they could have bought a hammock off the shelf and just strung it up there.
Yeah, it looks like they made one for this episode.
Yeah, it does. They probably did. I mean, a hammock's not a horribly complicated thing to just have the fabric department make.
Yeah, but they still had to do it, though. I mean, it took design and effort and time, and they had to still do it. But
if you're the type of guy who's been hired on at Star Trek to do design,
mm-hmm.
you're going to design the shit out of everything you can.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I would hope so, yeah.
You're not going to waste that opportunity.
Absolutely. I think you are absolutely right.
This shall be the greatest fucking hammock of all time.
Intro quote.
So at some point this hammock conversation turns to Jake trying to hook up his old man.
Dad, you need to get laid.
And I'm talking to this fly ass trucker chick.
Turns out she is pretty fly ass though.
Well, it's true, she is, but when your son tells you that he's been talking to a space trucker and he wants to hook you up with her?
Well, yeah, that's the same message the episode's giving, too.
Yeah, first you go to Dr. Bashir and you get a checkup.
Her name is Large Marge.
No.
And she told me to say that she sent me.
Nope. So anyway, Star Trek. So they start going to warp?
Whoops.
Okay, this is the part of the episode I kind of have a problem with on a technical level.
Okay.
Because nerd shit. Because, warp drive is the result of a very specific process happening.
Yes. A very artificial process.
And that process happening in that specific way is why when you go to warp, you don't splat against the back wall of the ship.
Yeah.
Because, let's just say that you could have an external force push an object faster than the speed of light.
It would disintegrate into an atom bomb explosion is what would happen.
Even setting that part of it aside, it's just assuming that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
The contents of the ship, which would not accelerate quite as fast as the ship around them, mm-hmm. again, splat against the wall.
Yeah, second law of motion there. It's, yeah.
The whole conceit
past that, this ship doesn't appear to have a deflector dish on it.
Nope. No, there's a lot of technical issues with the ship accelerating to warp drive and surviving and the crew surviving.
Yeah, this point of drama, because, you know, in the story you have to have everything's going well and something bad happens and they solve it. I mean, that's how storytelling goes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, come on, guys. This is the best you can come up with?
No, Cat, don't headbutt the cup.
Well, leave
bonk,
it to
bonk.
Leave it to
bonk,
Fort
bonk.
Leave it to Fort Max to completely, you know, sabotage the dramatic moment.
No, no, that's fine. It's made more sense than anything I was saying, so it's okay.
No, but it's just like there's no way to like hand wave what happens here. The ship shouldn't have gone to warp. The ship shouldn't have survived being pushed to that speed that fast.
And trying to integrate the fact that they're using solar cells and it was tachyons that did it. I mean, that doesn't make any sense for several reasons. They could have just said there was a subspace eddy. You know, there was like some sort of naturally occurring little warp bubble that exists for
a
little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that would help.
And that
it.
Would have been fine.
Yeah, that would help it a lot more.
The fact that, oh, we're using solar cells, so it has to involve them no matter what.
And it's not like it would have been too, too much. I mean, it still wouldn't be the big, even if they had that, it still wouldn't be the biggest coincidence of the episode. And yeah. It's not like that the entire series isn't based around a station that's important because of a wormhole it's next to.
Right.
That's a very good point.
No, I mean, just making it be a subspace phenomenon where, like, yeah, you could pretend, okay, somehow that interacted and formed a little warp field around the ship for a few minutes.
Yeah, just
a
few seconds.
And pushed it however far.
Sure.
But, I mean, making it just be tachyons pushing on the sail because it's a tiny little light ship with a lot of surface area. No, that it doesn't track.
Yeah, it's... Among the other scientific kind of questions that took me out of the episode about the solar cell ship, that was the one that's kind of like, yeah.
Because it's the one that most directly conflicts with the show's internal science. Or most obviously does. Because it shouldn't work that way by all the rules of Star Trek.
Right. It's not self-consistent, which kind of breaks things.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, get stuff that's inaccurate. If you have stuff that's wildly against regular science, but you're consistent with it and follow those rules, sure, why not?
Yes, we will believe that because...
Like, you break those rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all we're asking.
What it breaks down to is that they wrote an episode, but they wrote themselves into a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, can we scrap an episode that's pretty good?
That they could go around that.
We could scrap the episode that's pretty good and engaging because we don't have a real scientific way to justify what we've come up with. Mm-hmm. Or we could just say, fuck it, let's just go with good drama. Mm-hmm. And they went with good drama, which I think is the better choice.
Also, I just want to say, like, if they would have presented the idea of something called subspace rapids, that would have sounded badass as hell.
Yeah.
Please continue, though. I just had to point that out.
No. Quite right. Yeah, it's just lazy writing, you know, that's all it is.
It's lazy, and I think to Mickey's point, it's kind of cornered writing.
Yeah, I don't think it's lazy per se. I just think the writers had different priorities than making sure the technobabble matched up. They're more interested in telling the story.
You could look at, like, a holodeck failure episode 2, where, like, okay, the holodeck's broken, why don't they just beam the people out to save them? And every once in a while, very, very rarely, they will think of that and have a reason why they can't do that. But most of the time, it's like, oh no, they're trapped in the holodeck. We better fix it to get them out before they die.
Right.
Because we can only open the door and physically extract them. That's the only option we have.
You think at some point they'd modify the wall to the holodeck where they could just like snap it off and walk inside?
Yeah. Oh, I think there's a name for those. Doors.
Maybe we should just put like a standard turning doorknob instead of these mag locks on the thing.
Right. Yeah, why does the door to the holodeck have to be so goddamn secure? No other doors are these giant mag lock, you know, cargo bay looking things.
The door to the bridge is a turbo lift that's not even going to have like a security code on it.
Yeah, it doesn't have a deadbolt on it. Or a peephole.
Well, look, you got a room where 90% of the people who use it are, you know, making, like, sexual encounter scenarios for themselves.
Right.
I think it was a priority for everybody that the doors lock really securely.
like I said, like deadbolt and mag lock. Not even Doctor Who could get in, you know?
You know, what do you think Barclay had programmed in there that we didn't see?
Oh, well, let me look up the fan fiction. I'll tell you.
So, when you come on the holodeck, when you end programmed, does the cum get dematerialized too, or does it stay there on the floor?
Well, remember, the ship is self-cleaning.
I mean, does it just sort of fall out and splat when the holo whore disappears?
Yeah, probably.
No, I think it gets recycled like in the replicators, and it just goes back into the gray matter tanks.
So how much of the food they drink is just recycled semen?
All of it.
I would tend to think they keep some, like, they have it segregated for what matter goes to what purpose. So, like, there's probably, you know, food grade.
It goes to the salt container.
Sweet Jesus. Oh, my God.
Fort Max, you're the best.
Like, do they just save it up in case someone loads, like, a Bukkake holotape?
Well, the computer analyzes each new sample that it receives, and when it finds one that's of a superior quality to what it already has on file, it updates that so that when it has to replicate semen for someone else later, it uses that pattern instead to get, like, the best quality possible.
So it's not really MSG, it's more like MS-me.
So, like, you know, when Barclay loads in his creepy holotape stuff, or holodeck stuff, whatever... Like, you know, say if he's banging Riker, would the computer replicate Riker's semen from on file? His used semen out of the matter pool and recreate it?
Yeah, I think so. Or it'd be authentic.
Or it would probably use Bashir's.
Gross.
No, but would it match it up to the person, though?
Sure.
So if you get authentic Riker holo semen.
Yes, because when you recreate people, it creates all of their chemicals, so they smell the same, they feel the same, they sound the same, so genetically
they
should be the
same. Sometimes they even talk alike.
Yeah, exactly. And they even, you know, work that knob like it bought you jewelry the same.
Are we watching DS9 at some point?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how we got to... holodeck semen.
There was clearly a tachyon eddy that sucked.
I think it got to talking about why the holodeck doors lock.
Oh yeah. we were talking about, like, major plot holes in Star Trek that reoccur.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we've rewound ourselves back to the sail.
Now that
ship
we've rewound the holodeck take back.
Be kind, please rewind your holodeck.
Just put it into the holodeck rewinder.
Look, be sure to rewind your holodeck or Barclay's going to get mad at you.
Oh, God. Look, I just want to go to RISA, but I got to watch this FBI warning. Everything's all blue and fuzzy looking. Ah.
Oh, so it's the naked Andorian.
Hey, you stay out of my holotape, man.
Oh, no. Sisko broke his sextant. His space sextant, which somehow works.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna give that one a pass because nobody really understands how one of those works anyway.
And I kind of raise my finger and open my mouth and go, nah, fuck it.
Yeah, I particularly like, though, how that sextant clearly worked based on gravity.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's why you had to put the gravity net in the floor so the sextant would work.
Right. Okay, so the ship has gone to warp, and they've basically just gone to Starburst and jumped who knows where.
And their sails are basically ruined, so they can't really move under their own power anymore anyway.
So, I like how they both sort of conclude, like, well, we're fucked, we lost.
Yeah, we're dead.
Let's call for pickup. There's no Starfleet, we can fix this, we can do this. Like, nope, this is it.
You know what would have been really good for them to have on the ship? Like, it wouldn't have helped this problem specifically, but it might have been nice to, like, see a couple spacesuits in the back.
Yeah.
Like, you know, let's just say something bad happens and something pierces the hull. It'd be nice for them to be able to put on a spacesuit and not die.
Well, yeah, like you said before, there's no deflector dish. Like a small pebble would just rip this thing apart and they'd just die instantly. Yeah. So, yeah, you'd think
a space. I think it's kind of funny that they just let Sisko and Jake run off by the moon in an unproven ship, unescorted by a runabout.
Well, Sisko probably wouldn't let them send, an active escort. He'd probably feel it's, against the spirit of the thing.
Look, this is a solar cell ship. Did it even go...
The ancient Bajorans didn't have runabouts.
Right?
Yeah. And I don't think they get out of transporter range, to be honest.
But I'm saying,
The
runabout could record it.
Okay. It's like camping in your front yard. It's like you're not really camping.
Think about this. Think about this. In the pilot, in Emissary, when they discovered the wormhole, they were originally heading to the Denarius Belt, which was the destination of the sail ship. Right. And that was treated as they would be there in a couple of hours by runabout. And in the sail ship, they were talking it would be a few days until they get to the Denarius Belt. I don't think the runabout could go slow enough to escort that sail ship along its projected flight path.
Oh, it's got maneuvering thrusters. It could just kind of fart along next to it. It'd be fine. You just fucking low rider it, slowly.
They just generate thrust, but in the back door and pushing.
Right. Throwing baseballs out. Second law of motion. All right, so...
Including a important one.
So they actually managed to make it to Cardassian space.
Oh, but before... Well, you're skipping over the end of the B-plot.
I don't give a crap.
D-plot.
But go ahead. If it makes you happy.
So it turns out this girl's not a bitch after all. She just didn't know who the hell Bobashir was.
Because at a party they were both at, someone pointed out an Andorian and said that was Julian Bashir, because that's totally an Andorian name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is Robert Jones, the Klingon.
Could have been adopted.
I mean...
Who would adopt a Klingon? That's disgusting.
Worf Jones.
Yeah. Hey, what the fuck?
This is the story the episode presents, but I kind of think that... No, she actually is just a bitch, and now she's just trying to cover.
Or it's the two were together, people were drunk, pointing not quite the right direction. Guessing it was a party.
No, they wouldn't have been drunk, because there was no Irish person there.
There's no Irish doctors, they're not smart enough.
They drink too much.
Yeah, we keep drinking. We keep drinking the anesthetic. Oh, it's blue.
That's why you have so many Irish dentists, because they just, get a head full of the Novocaine.
I was going to say, that's why you have so many Irish cops. Oh, Flannery. What are you doing at this time of night? Come on, they're the two Irish cops in Assignment Earth. So come on, that stereotype's been well established.
It's not racist because it's Star Trek logic.
That's right.
It's a different universe. Entirely different racial profiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look at this freaking spoonhead on the screen now.
Oh, but before we get to that, so Bashir's school friend is all like, you've been doing amazing research projects. Why don't you tell me about them? In sick bay, where we'll be alone.
Under a table.
Oh, and there's the great line, too. Don't take this the wrong way, but I wish I would have taken this job from you.
Yeah, which is the thing he was so worried about, word for word. Yeah. Writing!
Well, I like how she knows precisely what he fucked up. Oh, you're the person who missed this question.
Yeah, everyone on the fucking quadrant.
Probably because he let everyone know about it.
Yeah, he won't shut up about it.
Well, yeah, she hasn't seen him since school.
Maybe she's genetically engineered too.
She wasn't genetically engineered smart enough to miss a question.
Okay, no, here's the thing.
She's genetically engineered to be a woman who never forgets when you make a mistake.
So a woman.
Right.
Oh, but again, Bashir never lets anyone forget about this mistake.
Yeah.
Even earlier in the episode, Dax is like, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing I'm thinking. Bashir's genetic status was not decided until they were writing that episode that they revealed it.
Mm-hmm.
So up to this point, he's just a fuckwit. And I think...
That's a technical term.
I think this plot in this episode is supposed to be the explanation of why he got that question wrong. Like, at this point in his development, it's because he wanted the Deep Space Nine assignment, which he would not have gotten. Like, he would have been put in the Lexington if he came in first in his class like she was. But he wanted Deep Space Nine, so he blew that question so he would not get top marks in the class. I think that's the intent of this at this point in his in how they're writing his character. It's not until they decide he's also genetically engineered where it's put together then, okay, so he threw that on purpose so that he would not raise anyone's suspicions that he was an overachiever.
But way back in the first episode, though, that he indicates that he could have had any job in Starfleet, but he chose this one particularly.
Yeah, because it's like the frontier and it's full of a bunch of toothless hicks.
So if he got valedictorian, would he not have had the option to go anywhere? Would he have been forced to take the Lexington?
I think this
it's
is
kind of like a draft.
I think they're kind of adapting that with this to kind of put the two things in context to each other. Like, you could look at it as in the pilot he's saying more that if he had gotten, like, he had the opportunity where he could have gotten any assignment in Starfleet, and he chose this, meaning he chose to score what he scored on that to get this assignment. But he had the capability to get any of them because he could have come in first in his class if he wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, retroactively, they could explain that away. But yeah, in this episode, it certainly isn't portrayed that way in this episode.
Again, it's an inconsistency that is generated more because they made him be genetically engineered later.
Right.
Which kind of just makes all of this seem really stupid, more than this plot already is stupid.
And this is from a guy who likes the episode.
Like, it would have been probably twice as interesting if the whole B-plot was just Bashir and Lita trying to organize a date. Through the whole
Dex keeps trying to come in and cockblock.
Not even trying to. She just does by accident every time. Like, have the whole B-plot be a comedy of Bashir cannot get a date with Lita, even though they're both interested. Everything
that
keeps going wrong.
Yeah.
Make the B-plot a sitcom.
Yeah, and that's usually a safer bet, because it kind of,
like,
should be.
I mean, I think
he goes in for the kiss, and then, like, his calm beats and Beeps and O'Brien has, like, broken his leg because he was drinking.
No, he threw his shoulder out because O'Brien.
I fell down the Jeffrey's tube.
Because I was drunk.
I went 60 meters. Bonk, 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 bonk. It was like a Plinko machine.
No, no. That would,
and it was
that
a Cardassian Jeffrey's tube, so it's all sharp.
Yeah. Shadowy. I couldn't see anything.
No, I'm thinking that would be more a thing that would have happened to Scotty back in the day. Because if you think the Star Trek V, where I know the ship like the back of my hand, and he turns around and smacks his head into a beam.
Right. Well, you know he had little bottles of hooch stashed all over that ship and all the Jeffrey's tubes.
Well,
half
yeah.
The problems
also
they
that
had...
Scotty would not have fallen very far before he got stuck.
Well, no. No, that would have been a different call to sick bay. I'm stuck in the Jeffrey's tube.
That is the best Scottish accent I have ever heard in my life. My God, it's like James Doohan was sitting here with him. Bones! Bones! Get the butter! I'm stuck again!
No, that's the Pat Bastard.
Get that chapel to get the squeegee!
Bring the buttered rum! No, but like... The Bashir plot as it is, I think, was trying to stay in the tone of the episode, which was, you know, kind of light, not doing anything major, just kind of days in the life of for the cast members. But I think it would have been better if they just kind of went full out comedy with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the A plot was still
pretty. And it's especially always fun to watch shitty stuff happen to Bashir.
True, true. Yeah, I don't think the A plot was pretty lighthearted, so they couldn't go too lighthearted with the B plot, because then it would just been a total fluff episode.
What's wrong with that? There's no reason to not have just a fluff episode every once in a while.
Oh, I agree, but I don't know if that's what they're going for DS9, it being all dark and grim and gritty for the 90s.
Did you forget that there was an episode all about them having a baseball game against Vulcans?
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that they had to do it every
time.
Did you
forget an episode that was all about them interacting with 20-year-old footage with a bunch of little fuzzy critters?
Yeah.
Did you forget that there was an episode that literally had Rumpelstiltskin in it?
Okay, I can't possibly, like, come back with that one, so, yeah. that you get that one.
And Buck Bakai, the best baseball player of the 22nd century, who is a 4-foot-tall, fat Asian man. Which really kind of says what the state
Don't
of baseball was.
Don't talk about Michael Okuda
that way. Oh.
Yeah. No, no, valid point, all point. I cease my defense.
Resistance is futile.
Yeah.
So anyway, back at the A plot.
Yep.
Well, there's a knock at the door, which is odd.
I see you safely made it here. And what a coincidence. In the last three weeks or less since we last spoke, we have suddenly found a crashed the Jorin sail ship.
Yeah.
Conveniently.
I really prefer to interpret it as in the time since the Cardassians detected the ship entering their borders, that's when they discovered the crash site. So
just
about
5 minutes ago we found this.
It had two badly charred bodies on board. How strange. We just found it. Oh, well.
So I kind of don't get it. It's like, why they went along with it anyway. Why don't they just say, you must have cheated. We don't believe you.
Well, I think they have enough good enough scanners they can figure. They've been watching this the whole time. You know they've been watching this the whole time. They know it's on the up and up.
Well,
but they would call it a lie for politics.
That's true. Yeah, it is kind of surprising they would go along with it and do the slow clap congratulations. You're right, that is kind of weird.
I mean, narratively for the episode, the Cardassians kind of have to do that because...
Otherwise, it doesn't leave the episode open.
Sisko's journey has to be validated. And it, like, if the runabout came to pick them up, it wouldn't have the same effect of Kira and O'Brien acknowledging that he made the trip successfully, because Kira already believed in it, and O'Brien would be satisfied just to be told, like, if he had stayed at the station, just be told that this worked, we did it. Because he does not have a deep...
He doesn't have any investment in it.
Right, he doesn't have an agenda to prove in this.
It'd be like, oh, cool, neat, it worked.
But the Cardassians, like, Kira's dialogue, the majority of the dialogue she has for this episode is to establish the Cardassians vehemently deny that this ever could have even happened. They will not even entertain the possibility that Bajorans made it to their star system in the past.
Right, right.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yes,
Mickey?
Okay, so then what they could have done then is... have the Cardassians begrudgingly, smilingly admit that, okay, maybe this did probably happen. Maybe you're right. Mm-hmm. What doesn't make any sense, though, is all of a sudden, oh, turning over evidence. Yes, this totally happened.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of pushes it a little bit too far.
That's a little too friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very friendly episode.
There should have been the Cardassians going, okay, yeah, maybe. And Sisko's like, damn right, fuck you. We did it.
Right. Now, tow us home.
And then it ends like on a high five freeze frame between Sisko and Jake.
Yeah. No, I mean, that would be more believable.
As the fireworks go off.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Uh-huh. I mean, the fireworks are a nice touch, just because it's so goofy.
Yeah, it really is the laugh freeze take.
Yeah, it is.
At the end of the episode. It really is.
No, Mickey's right. Having them acknowledge evidence on Cardassia that this happened in the distant past is more than it should have been. Grudging acceptance of, yeah.
Especially since it would be incredibly convenient that that's when they found it.
Well, I mean, obviously. You
know? Yeah.
No,
they've
but like
on it for hundreds of years.
Well, the Cardassians do keep everything.
Yeah, have you seen their houses? They're a fucking mess.
Well, that's what happens when you have 17 generations living in them at once.
Oh, God.
I was going to say something, but it's kind of escaped me now.
I'm sure it wasn't important.
Probably not.
So it's okay.
I've said so many important things this episode anyway.
So we're not, goddamn many important things.
We're not going to miss one more.
I can't take this level of this level of insight. I just can't handle it. I mean, I'm just overloaded with this depth.
No.
I'm used to going...
The appropriate ending for the episode would be for Goldicott to, you know, call and say, myth, plausible.
Yeah. Yeah, well. I think it's funny. He'd have to meet Sisko with three warships. Wasn't it just like him? And
that's fantastic. It's yeah, just the right Cardassian display of, uh-huh, we look like we could blow you up at any second. We're not going to, though.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, not
probably.
Even like one warship.
That's because Cardassians are like Timberwolves.
Are they?
Command. Remember TNG?
No.
Oh. We should do Chain of Command sometime.
So I never watched any of the Bajoran or Cardassian stuff in TNG because they had them in the late seasons when the show got kind of boring.
Chain of Command was really good, though. Like, part one is a good episode on its own merits. Part two is good just for, like, what they chose to show in that episode, which is the protracted torture of Picard at the hands of a Cardassian.
Oh, the off-form.
Was he shirtless?
No, he's pantsless, but he's not shirtless.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, he'd like to show shirtless Picard a lot in his weird rug of chest hair.
No, you know what? He is shirtless at the beginning of the episode, but then they give him like a burlap sack to cover himself with.
So not the standard Picard silk kimono.
Right. It's something in the same style, but, you know, less comfortable looking.
There needs to be like at Macy's, there needs to be like a Picard collection. Because I would buy those. Those look so comfy. I can show off my legs.
Suede jacket and turtleneck.
Damn right. Oh, have one of those body pillows of Q so I can redo that scene where he wakes up and rolls over and Q's in the bed with him. Yeah, that's what I want. I want a John DeLancey body pillow.
Now, Kilby recommended recently that we should just do, like, part one of Chain of Command. Because, well, it's the more interesting and discussable of the two-parter.
God, this seems like an awful tease, though, to do part one and not do part two, like, later, you know?
And plus, it's Kilby's idea, so it's probably not a good one.
Oof.
I mean, Kilby's let us make two podcasts, so you know his judgment's not really sound.
He's clearly not good at making good decisions.
He's let us make two and ended up with three on occasion by accident. You know, we have after show weeks.
That's not really another podcast. That's just
more
deleted
stuff
scenes.
We said that's really, really off topic.
I gotta say that when I had my interview with him, when I went into the big office he has with the big window overlooking the city, when I went into the interview with him.
Oh,
he
please. Like, he's
distracted.
Going to spend money on something he's going to use.
Well, there was the car for the BotCon trip that I told him to buy. No, I literally made him buy a car to take me to BotCon one year.
that, well, that's a hell of a power you have. If you if there's a superpower, the superpower to make people buy cars for your convenience.
Well, no, it's more that Kilby will love spending money on other people.
Well, yeah, that's also a good.
He's never bought me anything. Well, he did, diamond ring.
Well, he did ask if anybody else on the show needed like audio, like headsets or anything, like, you know, better audio stuff.
No, Paladin and Mickey don't need anything.
Well, no, actually, what I said to him when he asked that was, well, everybody basically sounds fine to my ear, except maybe Paladin, but he would just break it in a couple weeks anyway. that's literally what I said to Kilby when he asked.
Yeah. So do you have like a child safety version of like a headset, you know, like a Duplo or something?
My first headset.
Yeah, my first headset. It's like all rounded.
Yeah, but it's like Paladin's 20th headset is the problem.
It's like a busy box, only with a microphone.
Maybe Paladin's head is just really big, and what happens is like the bar across the top stretches and it eventually snaps.
Yeah, it's just the stress fracturing, huh?
Yeah.
It's like a Talosian.
Oh, God.
No, he's like a purple space hulk.
It's like what B. Arthur looks like with a migraine headache.
So I have good news.
Good news, everyone!
We're skipping Voyager.
Aww.
Oh, good. And oh, shit.
And you know what else? We're skipping Enterprise.
Okay, cool.
So we're back to original series.
Okay.
Unless somebody wants to do a movie or something, I don't know.
Maybe. How about after the beginning of the year?
Okay. We could do that.
Yeah. How about January? We do like another movie, but in the meantime, let's keep it kind of light and breezy.
Sounds good to me. I didn't really have any designs on doing a movie, but just, you know, throwing it out there.
We kind of covered the best one, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's still.
Well, no, we didn't cover the worst one.
Well, we need to do the worst one.
Wait, which one's the worst one?
Nemesis is the worst one. We're not doing that.
No, we're not.
Oh, we're not doing like Undiscovered Country. Have you guys already done that one?
I like Undiscovered Country. I think it's good.
I don't like Undiscovered Country.
Okay,
it's not bad.
I like the first half of Undiscovered Country, and like the last 15 minutes, I guess. Okay,
but
so
the
like
middle 3 hours, we're on there on the ice prison planet.
Okay, so the start of Undiscovered Country where. The whole point of the scenes are the Enterprise crew is basically together acting as a family who have been with each other for 20 years. And you get that in every interaction they have, every line they share with each other. And then bringing in the Klingons as potential allies and how Kirk is so personally offended by that because of his experiences with them.
Right.
Like, that to me is really interesting and compelling because it's really great character growth for the whole, like, as the culmination of that era of Star Trek, it's a really great point to bring everything to.
It really is, especially, you know, because Next Generation.
Yeah, the Klingons are just there and it's a way of life.
Right. And
but
seeing the transition.
The 3 hours in the ice prison are terrible. And then the last 15 minutes where Sulu comes in with Excelsior and Enterprise team up to blow up the Klingons. That is awesome. Like, I love that as a capping moment for the movie.
Captain Sulu the Excelsior is awesome no matter what. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Like, I love that Sulu did so well that he has his own ship. And at the end, he teams up with the old crew and both ships just kick ass together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like Sulu having his own ship. I just have a hard time accepting that he ever did anything remarkable enough to gain captainship.
Well, no, here's the thing.
Really?
He was being judged compared to Kirk. So, you know, Kirk is just wild and uncontrollable. So they basically put him on a ship that they're not doing anything important with. They put him on the renamed Enterprise A. And it's just like, yeah, go fart around and try not to get in any trouble. Meanwhile, Sulu is, like, model officer. It's like, you know, compared to Kirk, this guy would make a great captain. Let's put him in a ship.
I just don't... Okay, in all the times we've seen Sulu, I've never got any kind of leadership vibe from him. Until he was the captain. of the Excelsior. Before that, is he was just the guy that took orders and pointed the ship where to go.
He also fired the gun sometimes.
Well, that's probably because that was his job.
Yes, but okay. I'm not going to say, you know, it would be a great captain to make decisions and think of things of where to go and be good with diplomacy. The person who drives the car, let's do that.
No, what they're thinking is, you know who would be a great captain who would listen to the instructions we give him and not go out and cause trouble for no reason? Sulu. Like,
so you're saying that they just picked someone because he was boring?
They picked someone because they decided, you know what, he'll toe the line.
He's not going to go out and steal starships.
Right.
Although, Sulu, I mean, he was party to that.
Sulu exemplifies Starfleet. You know, he is. He's a model officer. He's good at what he does. He's smart. He's knowledgeable. And when he is captain, he's a kick-ass captain. But we don't see that gap between him being just a helmsman and being captain. We don't see any of that.
No, I mean,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not debating him as captain. I'm saying, I don't see how he made the jump from him being a helmsman to getting promoted to a captain of his own ship.
There's got to be novels out there.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
I'm like, something had to happen.
Memory beta, then, I guess.
Yeah, here we go.
Something had to have happened for Starfleet to notice this one particular officer and think, should we consider him for the Excelsior, our flagship to be, or whatever they were thinking.
Yeah, the helmsman for the Enterprise? Yeah, I would pick the guy who's gotten the Enterprise out of a lot of trouble, who's been on the flagship of the Starfleet. Yeah, he would be a great captain. You kidding?
The counterpoint to this is, it seems like in all this time, none of the other Enterprise bridge crew was ever considered for other assignments. Like, the senior staff of the Enterprise always stayed with the Enterprise except for Sulu.
I think Chekov, he went off and did his own stuff. But yeah, everyone else seemed to kind of stick around.
But Chekov was also never in, like, the command lineup either. Later on he was.
He was an admiral. Admirable. He was an admiral later on.
The thing is, I can see Uhura being promoted to captain of her own ship more than Sulu.
Really?
Because as communications, she is more based on diplomacy and that nature.
Well, that said, I would see her being more.
They needed someone to keep everyone from firing on Kirk right away.
Basically, what I'm boiling it down to is this: Uhura, I think, has more natural charisma than Sulu does.
Okay, but at the same time,
before Sulu becomes captain, I'm just saying, Star Trek's 1 through 5 and all that stuff, I think Uhura has got more natural charisma.
I agree with that.
Okay, she may have more charisma, but does she have? And I mean, you're going to say Sulu's never demonstrated either, but does she have? Does she present with like the creativity for Starship Command?
I think so, because looking at the problems that she solved and the things that she would come up with, I think she does have the creativity to be a captain. I never really thought of it that way, but yeah, I don't think she's more creative than Sulu.
Okay.
I think ultimately, though, Uhura would not want to captain her own ship.
Probably not.
No.
But I think she would be their first person they asked.
And, like, Spock got promoted to the rank of captain, but he was never shown having a command off by himself.
Yeah, he could be, like, he could have been a desk captain. I mean, you know. Because not all captains have to be captains on a ship. I mean, it's a rank, not a job.
Was he not going to captain the Enterprise when Kirk was admiral at some point? Wasn't that in Wrath of Khan, the Enterprise was his ship?
I think maybe, but
because there was no other captain on board.
Yeah,
I think he may have technically been captain of the Enterprise for that, but again, Enterprise. He was not off away from all the others doing a captain job.
Right, and keep in mind that captain is a title that's specific to the ship, and it's also one that's specific to a person, and they don't have to be the same thing. Like an admiral can be the captain of the ship. A lieutenant can be the captain of a ship if they're the highest ranking
person.
Commander
Sisko was
captain
of the Defiant.
Right, even though he might have had the rank of captain, he was the captain of that ship. So it gets a little confusing with the nomenclature.
Mm-hmm. There's the rank, and then there's the boss.
Right.
The rank.
Right. Are you the
position.
Boss of the ship? Then we call you captain.
No, but I mean, he was Captain Spock.
True. And, he could have been a desk captain. You know, that's
and
what I'm
in
thinking.
Wrath of Khan, he did seem to be in charge of the Enterprise. Nominally. But, you know, Kirk, as being Kirk, came in and just kind of took over with his super admiral powers.
Yeah. And Spock, once again, didn't just snap his neck out of annoyance.
Well, you know? I mean, he was a higher ranking officer. Of course he's going to obey his orders.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so next, the original series, right?
Yes.
TOS.
Anybody have suggestions?
Well, golly, I had to look.
Because I hadn't really thought that far ahead.
Nor have I. Let's take a little looky look.
So Grand Galvatron was formed by Unicron after Galvatron was destroyed, calling on dead robots hoarding grudges from across the multiverse.
I love it.
How about Spock's brain?
Okay.
No. I thought we agreed not to do that one.
I admit nothing.
All right. Well, we do whatever, man. I'm along for the ride. I can make fun of anything you throw in front of me.
No, we're not doing Spock's brain.
Why not?
Oh, I don't know.
It's no Nemesis.
Oof. Let's see here. There's the Changeling, which is a good classic with Nomad, you know, where Kirk outsmarts a computer.
You mean V'ger 1.0?
Exactly. That is exactly what I mean.
Okay. Yeah, the Changeling, where Uhura gets her brain erased.
Oh, Mirror, Mirror. Have we not done Mirror, Mirror?
Mirror, Mirror is a little too obvious, I think.
All right.
Yeah, we don't want to do anything too classic that people already kind of know.
All right.
Too obvious.
Cat's Paw would be from season 2 would be another weird one.
Now, I'm not opposed to doing one of the Mirror Universe episodes from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, those are good.
Like, maybe do the last good one, which is where, you know, Mirror Defiant.
Mm-hmm. Ultimate Computer might be a good one with the Multitronic M5 computer, where he also outsmarts a computer. Are you sensing a theme?
Somewhat, yes.
The episode with the planet of Harry Mudd's androids.
Yeah, yeah.
We've already done Harry Mudd, though.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Bread and Circuses, or is that too good of an episode? Bread and Circuses, when they went down, it's like 20th century technology, but it's built with the Roman Empire.
Ooh. Ooh.
I'm Spartacus. No, I'm Spartacus.
How about the Squire of Gothos?
Q?
Oh, yeah, that could be a good one. That might, yeah. That sounds pretty good.
I mean, Chalain.
What was that novel that pegged him as being a Q?
Well, I think anyone with a brain figured out he was a Q.
No, but I mean, there actually is a novel that just went ahead and declared
said
that.
It.
Oh. Yeah. What was the name of the one you said, Mickey?
Squire of Gothos?
Yeah.
Yeah, where's that at? Is that season...
Season 1. Season we could one. Do Devil in the Dark where they fight that evil horchata.
Oh, it makes my throat all gunky thinking about it.
Oh, it was Q Squared, that's the novel.
Mm.
It was one of the Peter David novels.
Peter David novels were generally good from what I remember, but I haven't read them since I was in high school, so...
Which was like 40 years ago.
Oh, God, I know. It's probably longer. I actually read them before Next Gen aired.
Oh, Jesus. Good God, you're old. I'm glad I'm not that old.
I know. You're older.
I'll go ahead and vote for Devil in the Dark. Season 1, episode 26.
I'm okay with that.
Because we get to see Spock act, show emotion, and all the other things that actors do.
And we also get to see a walking shag rug.
No, that's Star Wars. That's something else. That's Chewbacca.
Okay, I mean, it's not really walking so much as like shuffling and undulating, but still.
Shambling. I think that's the word you're looking for.
Yes, a shambling carpet.
Yes. Which is the crappiest of D&D enemies. Okay, it rolls. It does 2 damage. All right, yep. I vote for season 1, episode 26, The Devil in the Dark.
I mean, I'm fine with that.
Okay, 2.
Right. Fort Max, Mickey.
3.
Sure.
Yay, 4. We agree.
Excellent. Unanimous decision.
Hooray.
Yay. Okay, well, I guess that'll do it for us this week.
Can't believe we wasted all that time talking about Transformer toys. You nerds.
Ah, well, we haven't wasted that because come back later for a 15-minute after show where we talk about Transformers toys because nerds.
And I give my opinion once or twice.
Well, Scott, we have to let you talk occasionally.
That's true, even about Transformers.